racing for the Hungarian Grand Prix. Good launch for Max Verstappen, and immediately they're going to go wheel to wheel. Side by side they go into turn one. Will we go three wide in there? Verstappen has the inside line. Max Verstappen has the lead of the Grand Prix as he runs Lewis Hamilton wide. And what a move to the inside for Oscar Piastri, who moves up to second position. Hamilton from pole down to third. An amazing getaway. The two Brits go wheel to wheel. Verstappen has the lead. Then it's Piastri. Then it's Lando Norris. No grip, no traction, no drive for Lewis Hamilton.
The launch there and the drive phase. That's where Verstappen was weak last time out at Silverstone.
Sorry about that, guys. Don't sweat it, Lewis. It's going to be a long, hot race.
Wow. Incredible that he could be apologising too early. You can see Joe had anti-stall. That was the reason why he dropped down through the field. And where is the contact at the back? They tripped over each other.
Now, Ricciardo went into the back of Ocon. Joe had anti-stall. That's a bit of a shocker for Joe from his best ever qualified position. Look at Ricciardo now. He's the car ahead, and he's just going to just drift in. Or is it Joe? Oh, it's
Joe into Ricciardo into the Alpines.
Yeah, so Ricciardo gets carte blanche for that then. He's out of control because he's hit from behind into Ocon. It's a bit 2021 again, but this is in the dry.
I think this is going to be terminal, please.
Wow. Alpine having such a disappointing day. Both cars are out again. And they're in the clutches now of Perez, who is sent to the outside with DRS enabled. What sort of drive does he get? Tries the switchback move, but he's on a harder compounded tyre, and Alonso stays ahead.
Double DRS though, Perez has it again. Now you can pass on the outside, but Alonso is wary of that. He sends it deep on the brakes, so he doesn't give Checo the chance through the Lando Norris lap one move.
Now the second Red Bull looking to make the move that's been coming for a couple of laps, and finally Perez gets to the inside. Alonso will try and fight it, but it's a second DRS zone for Perez to extend ahead. Mexican driver up to seventh place. Norris trying to secure back-to-back podiums. Pressure on the McLaren team.
Now he's 2 seconds away from his teammate. This is undercut territory for Norris on his teammate. It's a good stop again then. Norris is 8 tenths quicker as he comes through. Fastest middle sector of anyone. So this is going to be very, very tight as Piastri peels into the pit.
Can they deliver a 2.3? That looked very good.
Oh, 2 seconds is exactly what Piastri needed. But Norris is very, very close. Norris with those tyres fired up. The two McLarens wheel to wheel. And Norris's outlap absolutely outstanding. The British driver goes through and up to four. Charles Leclerc won't be in the best of moods, and he's trying to scare Stroll out of the way. We've made our way through turn one. This is turn two. Is the room there? How brave is he feeling? The answer's very. That's ninth position, and that's an efficient move for Charles Leclerc. Here's a pass for Sergio Perez. He's going back past Carlos Sainz. You can see all the marbles off the racing line. The Red Bull getting very, very close to the Ferrari, but making its way by, and that's now sixth position for the Mexican driver.
Checo gets down the inside, George Russell, or does he?
Eventually, Sergio Perez fires his way through. Russell wasn't prepared to give it up. He left the room, he had the better traction heading down the hill, and they went side by side through three. I thought we were heading to contact.
How is that not contact? Sticking a nose in the entry of three.
Perez thinking about the move. It's the closest that he's been all the way through. Now he's going to have a great opportunity in the second DRS zone. Perez trying to take fourth place in the Hungarian Grand Prix. Hamilton will hug the inside line and he will say go to the dusty, dirty part of the track. Better traction for Perez, but no drive. Hamilton defends again.
Big lockup from Leclerc, but I think he'll be okay with that one as he comes for a pit stop. This is undercut territory for him on his teammate. So Leclerc, I think, has been given this chance to undercut Sainz after he was on the radio complaining that he couldn't go quicker.
This was Charles Leclerc with the moment, the lock-up that added 5 seconds to his race time via the penalty. We move now to Piastri being attacked by Sergio Perez. Perez, there's the late defensive move from the Australian driver who hugs the apex. He says, go the long way round, nothing between the two of them, but it's better grip, better traction than the DRS, and fourth position for Sergio Perez.
Perez needed that. That was an aggressive move around the outside. Piastri not giving it up as he runs out onto the grass. So brilliant piece of driving from both drivers there not to have contact.
Lewis Hamilton comes into the pit to get rid of those old hard tyres. Up to P2. Restored to second place goes Lando Norris.
Yeah, that's the best thing for Norris. He doesn't have to deal with passing Hamilton, losing time.
And Piastri's got Lewis Hamilton, who adores this racetrack, all over the back of him with DRS. Same power unit for both of the cars. And Hamilton takes the pass on the inside, gets the DRS again, and Hamilton disappears down the road. Easy move up to fourth. Is this even going to be a contest for George Russell on the medium tyres? Waiting to get the power down. Sainz just doesn't have the purchase at all, and Sainz offers a defensive shape because he's got no other option, but Russell will sail on by with the use of DRS, and that's seventh place. Red Bull round the final corner on a day to celebrate for the team and driver. The Dutch driver has dominated once more. Seven victories in a row for Max Verstappen, who wins the Hungarian Grand Prix. And that long-standing record is gone. 12 wins in a row for Red Bull in Formula One. They take the consecutive win record away from this team, from McLaren. And I don't think McLaren will mind too much, because they are resurgent in the hands of Lando Norris, who is on his way to just his eighth Formula One podium. What an outstanding drive once again. He lost the position to his teammate at the start. He calmly retook it in the pit stop sequence. Lando Norris back on the second step of the podium. What a July he is having. And across the line, Perez recovers from ninth to third, chased all the way by Lewis Hamilton.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast, featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap.
Welcome into season 5. This is episode number 22 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2023 Hungarian GP race review. You've got Andy, and he is back. He is stateside once again. Say hello to Mr. Cody. How's it going, my friend? It is good to see you. How's the world traveling?
Oh, it was a blast. I had a great time. It's, you know, funny to come back to the Chicago area and have, you know, 80s feel like, you know, like a walk in the park. It was so hot, but yeah, great time. Still a little turned around with the sleep schedule, but it's coming back. So yeah, glad to be back.
Well, I hope the earlier start time this morning than most. I don't know if that would have helped or hurt you this morning, but
you know, it's not so bad in the morning. It's when it gets to be like the early afternoon, like 1 or 2 o'clock, brain's like, it's time for bed, because it's like the middle of the night in Japan, and I'm like, I can't do it.
Well, like I said, it's good to see you. Welcome back. I'm glad the trip was a lot of fun. I want to see pictures, and I'm sure you guys will regale us with stories all in due time. But yeah. So yeah, if you're here, we have a race to talk about. We have the Hungarian GP to go through. And if you found us, you can also find us on Twitter. And I have to put in again, what is left of it. I don't know how long we're going to be calling it Twitter, apparently, but we're over there. We also have a Threads. I did start a Threads. I haven't really used it a ton yet, but it is something that I may end up having to use more and more. So you can find us there as well. Kind of get the same type of social media coverage of the weekend. I'll try to do as best I can between the two of them. Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and of course YouTube at Outlap F1 Podcast. See the link tree in our show notes. If you happen to be watching this video on YouTube, do us a solid, click the like and subscribe button. Or if you're on your favorite podcasting app, click the five-star buttons, particularly Apple Podcast or Spotify. It just helps come up in search results and helps us get our content to you that much quicker. You can email our show, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll get you there. You can check out the website, www.outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. We are eternally grateful for our monetary supporters, including Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quentin Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of what we call the hashtag Outlap F1 Nation, please see our link in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $5. All goes back into trying to make the show better. We want to put every dime that we can scrape together back into the show and make improvements where we can. So please check out that if you'd like to. You can also take advantage of our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, gets you 20% off and free shipping from the good folks at Manscaped. And you can also check out our buddy Vincenzo Landino. He has an F1 shirt line at the F1guy.com. F1 quality merch at not necessarily the F1 quality price. So that's not necessarily an easy thing to find. So go feel free to check those out. I think they're pretty cool. So check out the F1guy.com. The particulars are now out of the way. Cody, lead us off with your headline of the day.
All right. My headline of the day is, it's not a fluke. Number four is number two weeks in a row. Meanwhile, number one will remain as such until the end of time.
At least this weekend. Absolutely true. Boy, did that ever ring true. My headline of the day is, congratulations to Red Bull on the most consecutive win record. Whatever your thoughts on them, you cannot argue with these results. And then my other headline is, yeah, that McLaren thing, it's now a thing. Upgraded pace confirmed. This was the type of racetrack that would have probably scared the absolute you-know-what out of me. Hot, sticky, tire-melty conditions, an exact opposite of a few weeks ago when they first brought the upgrade, and it didn't matter. They were still fast. So, yeah, count my excitement level upgraded, if nothing else. We will get into the qualifying, and this was the first qualifying with what we need to call the, quote, alternative tire format, but I will take you through the results here. So going out in P20 was the Williams of Logan Sargeant, P19 was Kevin Magnussen, P18 was George Russell, P17 was Yuki Tsunoda, P16 was Alex Albon. Advancing through to Q2, but going no farther, in P15 we find Pierre Gasly, P14 was Lance Stroll, P13 Daniel Ricciardo on his AlphaTauri re-debut, P12 was Esteban Ocon, P11 just missing out on the Q3 shootout, the Ferrari of Carlos Sainz. Advancing through to the top 10 shootout from 10 to 1, P10 was Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas, P9 Sergio Checo Perez, P8 Fernando Alonso, P7 was Valtteri Bottas, P6 was Charles Leclerc, P5, personal best qualifying for him was Joe Granieux in the Alfa Romeo. P4, Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. P3 was Lando Norris in the other McLaren. P2 was Max Verstappen in the Red Bull with a lap time of 1:16.609. Pole number 104 for Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. Cody, what was your thoughts on the qualifying?
I actually thought it was a really exciting session, and I didn't remember that we were going to be doing an alternate qualifying format this time. So when it went into that, you know, the first round of qualifying and everyone's on hards, I was like, what the hell is going on? And I shot you a message and you cleared it up for me real quick. But I think it seemed like, at least in the first couple sessions, that it was throwing things for a little bit of a loop. I'm not sure if the qualifying was exciting because of the new tire format that they used, or if it was just crazy because everyone's been bringing upgrades and you had teams that usually have no business being that close to the front, like you know, the Alfa Romeos punching through. But I thought it was really exciting. Definitely a lot of unusual placements. You got, you know, George Russell way at the back. You got, you know, Valtteri Bottas and Joe Manu really close to the front. And, of course, you've got someone other than Max Verstappen getting a pole. And I was actually cheering from my seat when Lewis Hamilton took it by, what was the margin, 3/1000ths of a second? Yeah, it was incredibly close. Very exciting.
Less than a tenth of a second covering the top three.
Yeah.
I mean, that is insanely close. I haven't seen the overlay. I want to see the overlay of each of the laps amongst the three of them, because it was that freaking close. And I, as a McLaren fan, you know, it was an exciting session for me. All I heard when Lando crosses the line, he sees the big board and he's reading the times and he just goes, "Fuck!" really loudly on the radio. And I'm like, "Dude, why are you so upset?" And he's like, "I wanted the pole, man. You know, we don't have many chances to get those." So, I mean, they clearly meant that they were all letting it all hang out. And Lewis Hamilton, one hell of a lap in the Q3 session to put that together and to actually take it a bit to Max, who between the Friday and Saturday didn't look, you know, super comfortable. So, you know, you thought maybe going into the weekend, like, oh, you know, this is the Hungaro ring. This doesn't suit the Red Bull quite so well. Maybe we'll, you know, maybe here's a chance to do some things. We ended up with a mixed up grid and we ended up with a tight qualifying session. But here's what I'm going to tell you. The Hungaro ring is always a tight qualifying session, and the Hungaro ring usually gives you some people out of position, either to the good or to the bad. So I don't know that it was the tire thing that did it, but having watched both of the practices, or all three of the practices, and then going into that qualifying, it felt much more, especially the Q1, like a tire test. You know, where it was almost teams lining up two by two by two. Now you end up with George Russell in the back because of some execution issues. I don't think it was a question of, you know, that the hard tire was the bogey tire. So, you know, I put in some notes about the alternative qualifying format now that we've seen it. To me, there has to be a better way to save costs and be more environmentally friendly. It made all of the Friday running almost moot. You really didn't know where anybody was, and you didn't know where anybody was. It felt like a test session all over again. And people pay good money to watch that Friday stuff. So yeah. From a fan perspective, it was really annoying. And the other thing it does is it takes strategy calls from teams like Williams, who, you know, basically set their whole thing up to really do well on the softer tires. Mm-hmm. And then they just try to kind of get through the race based on where they qualify. Well, you take that bullet basically out of their chamber. So you didn't see the Williams do really well here at all with that.
Yeah.
You know, we got a mixed up grid, but like I said, it was more a function of the mistakes than the tires. Now, the other thing is I think with this track, we also got very, very fortunate that we didn't have anybody spin off on that hard tire session. To me is you're gambling with a problem here. I you don't have high speed corners here. You don't have the lateral flip and flop. You have it in some areas, but it's not as crazy as like where we're going to, like Spa. You put a hard tire and try to send out on a qualifying lap with full bean engine modes going, I don't think you're going to like the answer you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we were bringing the softest three compounds that we had. So your hard tire is a C3. In other places like Silverstone, that's the soft tire. So again, there's got to be a better way to do this than what we have here. I hope that the teams realize that this was probably not a good thing to tinker with. To me, qualifying's not broken. Leave it alone. Let's move on.
I mean, they do keep trying to tinker with qualifying, though. We've got like the weird sprint qualifying now that has different rules than regular qualifying. We've got regular qualifying now that occasionally has different rules than regular qualifying. It's getting to be a little over the top, in my opinion. I think they should just, they've got a good format going. It's exciting. It's been particularly exciting this year. I haven't found the sprint qualifying to be particularly interesting, or at least not more so than what they've always been doing. So yeah, I agree with you. It's not broke. Don't fix it. Just leave it alone. And you know, if there's issues with the cost of shipping tires, you know, there's gotta be, you know, other ways to try to make up those costs.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to take two sets of tires away from everybody, go ahead and take two sets of tires away from everybody, but give them the freedom to at least pick what they want to use and put on the cars when and where. Mm-hmm. You know, teams are good at managing whatever you're going to throw at them. You know, if that really is where we're trying to get at. You know, next week we're going to see the sprint thing again, you know, at Spa this time, and we're going to watch, you know, trying to smush the qualifying into Friday, and then, you know, then you basically kind of, as a fan, can kind of sit back and go, okay, well, the worst thing that's going to happen to anybody out of Saturday is we're down 8 points. Mm-hmm. That's the absolute worst thing. So, like, if your rival wins the sprint, okay, it's 8 points. That shouldn't break or break anybody. So you can kind of almost relax as a fan. So that's kind of where I'm at, where I just kind of go, okay, well, here's the Saturday thing. Am I really that upset if they don't make Q3? A little bit. You know, am I really upset? You know, the last sprint, I did get upset because like Lando was in P3 and then he, you know, had another bad first lap and ended up out of the points and he didn't end up scoring. And then I had to sit back and I said, it was only worth 8 points. Calm yourself down. It's okay. Then I felt a lot better. I'm like, you know, they'll get him on Sunday. And sure enough, you know, he did well there. So, you know, to me, like I said, I think in your traditional format that we've had for a very long time has a natural build throughout the course of the weekend. And as long as you let that kind of happen, you can still get mixed up grids. This track would have always offered you a mixed up grid, kind of a wet and, you know, and, well, it wasn't wet, but I mean, a wild type qualifying. So I don't know how much the tire thing did or didn't contribute to the overall grid, but overall, like I said, not a fan. All right, so we will now transition into the Sunday race, and we will start, as we are apt to do, with the back markers. So that would be Esteban Ocon in the Alpine, joined by his teammate Pierre Gasly in the other Alpine, who didn't see the end of the first corner. P18 was Logan Sargeant. He at least completed all but three of the laps, but he did not see the checkered flag as well. P17 was Kevin Magnussen. P16 was Zhou Guanyu. P15 was Yuki Tsunoda. P14 was Nico Hülkenberg. And P13, gotta say, it's a solid day on re-debut, Daniel Ricciardo in the other AlphaTauri. So, Cody, big thoughts from the back markers.
I do feel a little bad for Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly, who had the race taken away from them before it ever really got going. And it's just awful luck that it's both Alpines that were the ones that ended up out. I would say that for Daniel Ricciardo, I really wasn't expecting much from him, you know, in his first race back after being sidelined for half a season. I actually found him to be pretty impressive. He, you know, he's at the top of our list of back markers. You know, 13th place is not too bad, especially considering the car he's driving. And he out-qualified Yuki Tsunoda, albeit it was, I believe, a very small margin, but out-qualified him nonetheless. And he's, like I said, been out of the car for 6 months. So I'm hoping that that means that there are good things to come for him going forward and that he'll be he'll be showing that he still has what it takes and probably making Sergio Perez sweat a little bit. But yeah, other than that, let's see here. Zhou Guanyu, he was really disappointing considering how well he qualified. Like, I thought it was going to be really exciting watching both Alfa Romeos competing up near the front. They were doing very well in qualifying. And then to see Joe pretty much drop like a rock off of the line and then be more or less responsible for taking two cars out of the race and then, you know, finishing way back outside the points, 11 spots back from where he qualified. Yeah, pretty disappointing.
Yeah, not the weekend that could have been, I think, for Alfa Romeo. I mean, they came with a very radically designed new rear wing. And it definitely seemed to give them some extra downforce in the qualifying sessions because they were definitely able to light up their tires right away, especially over the course of one lap. That was consistent for them in the practice sessions, and it was consistent for them, you know, in the Saturday qualifying itself. Whatever tires seemed to throw them on, they seemed to light up pretty good around that track. So, you know, that may be they may like the hot and sticky type of weather conditions. So that may have gone to their favor. But yeah, I mean, come race day, I mean, Zhou barely gets off the line. It looks like it's almost like anti-stall, and then he finds first gear. It looks like whatever the launch mapping never engaged, or he didn't, you know, something went awry. That's definitely for sure. Mm-hmm. And then when he's trying to make up for it, he basically becomes the bowling ball that starts the chain reaction that takes out you know, Ricciardo gets clipped by it, and then it takes out basically both Alpines at the same time with Ocon going up into the air for a little bit. You know, he did end up getting checked at the medical center, and from everything I've read, he's fine. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, so yeah, I mean, really, really got to kind of almost feel for Alpine, 500 feet and your race is done. Mm-hmm. Can't really do anything really about that. Other than maybe you wish you qualified a little bit better, but you know, I mean, I don't know what else we can really say with that. Yeah, tough day for our American Logan Sargeant. Lots of learning going on, I think, for sure this weekend. And like I said before, I think this tire thing, the way that they did the qualifying, really hampered what Williams would have tried or could have tried to do in the Saturday sessions to try to improve, you know, their starting position. Their relative race pace is okay, but it's not great. And once you get kind of bogged down into that midfield, unless you are a standout type of car, it's very difficult to come through on a track that's also very difficult to overtake as well. So we will now move into the midfield, and that midfield finds P12 with Valtteri Bottas, P11 Alex Albon, just missing out on the points. P10 was Lance Stroll, P9 Fernando Alonso, so the Aston Martin's at the back of the points today. P8 was Carlos Sainz, P7 was Charles Leclerc, probably not where Ferrari want to be. P6 was George Russell, very good recovery drive there. P5, Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. And P4, starting on pole, but not even making the podium, was Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. Cody, thoughts on the midfield?
Definitely have a lot of thoughts here on the midfield. We'll start with the top of the midfield, Lewis Hamilton. I was really excited to see Max Verstappen versus Lewis Hamilton at the front row again. I thought it was going to get hairy, and nothing really happened with it. Pretty much got off the line pretty well, but Max, you know, had the inside line, and he pretty much did what he usually does and was like, nope, not a chance, man, and pushed Lewis Hamilton right about as far as you could push him without it getting, you know, incredibly unfair. And then once he, you know, took off in the lead, it was all over. But then Hamilton continued to drop back, I believe, a little bit more. He lost more than just that first position and then spent the rest of the race trying to claw back what he lost. I was really also gunning for him at the end to make that last podium position. He probably would have caught Sergio Perez if he had just a couple more laps. But, it's another story of what could have been. George Russell made a really awesome recovery drive from 18th to 6th. So really good to see him, you know, pulling through. And we're kind of in a weird spot now where there's several teams that have been performing very well consistently. So I think we have, I would say, 5 consistently, like, good teams, and they're taking up all of the points-paying positions now. So I feel like we're going to see a lot less points coming to, you know, like Williams, Alfa Romeo, Haas, those guys, even Alpine, less points coming through so long as you have Red Bull, Ferrari, Aston Martin, Mercedes, and now McLaren performing well week after week.
Yeah, I mean, definitely tightly packed midfield battles kind of up and down. I look at the two Aston Martins, and, you know, they started the season so incredibly strong. And we've kind of wondered, was this them being the best of the rest or them being the first of the rest? And I think what we're now starting to see is they were really the first of the rest to make the step. And now these other teams have kind of stepped past, maybe even through them to a large extent. Now, they still are sitting very pretty when you look at the table. But this is now a track that they had said after Silverstone, they were like, well, weather didn't suit us. The track didn't suit us. We think we'll go a lot better in Hungary. They only managed 3 points amongst the two drivers. So, mm-hmm. And they finished, you know, basically 2 by 2 with, you know, with themselves and the Ferrari. So, and you really didn't hear or see hardly anything from Fernando Alonso. And, you know, once that you give that guy a sniff at a result, he's up for the fight. That much has not changed, but, you know, whatever it was, Aston looks to have lost some of the mojo a little bit. And you got to look at Ferrari and kind of say the same thing. My gosh, I don't get what's going on with the decision desk over there. You've got Carlos Sainz telling the engineer, no, I'm not going to go into that engine mode right now. It's not time for that. You've got Leclerc and Sainz both saying, can we get my teammate out of the way, please? Mm-hmm. And Ferrari telling them to hold station and getting a little heated on the team radio there. So, and you know, they end up losing to George Russell, who, you know, in the, and you know, in the Mercedes, who did have, I think, probably the best recovery drive, or one of the best recovery drives that I've seen him do in his career. Mm-hmm. You know, P18 to P6, that's hard to do. You know, so you can say what you want about the Merc car. It's not awesome, but it's good enough to where at least you can carve your way through a good chunk of the midfield. And George, I think, acquitted himself very well there. Another kind of hard luck race, if you're talking to Oscar Piastri and the McLarens. He ended up breaking his floor about midway through that final stint, and then you could really see his lap time really, really suffer. So I think that definitely was a factor. But talk about great start. He had the best start of probably anybody other than Max Verstappen, and zips by his teammate and zips by Lewis Hamilton to take P2 off the line. So he was sitting really good up until the first pit stop, where, you know, it was Lando in third and Piastri in second. And what McLaren were doing were covering off the Mercedes because Lewis had just pitted. And so they boxed Lando first, even though he was the second car, to cover that move off. Mm-hmm. They then boxed Oscar on the very next lap to cover the Lando move. And it was just Lando's outlap was that much better. And I could also vouch, they told Lando on the team radio, zero risk going into that turn one, which is McLaren speak for, if you touch your teammate, get ready for the wrath of God to come down on you. So they were telling them not to necessarily race or mix it up amongst themselves. It just kind of played out that way. Oscar then settles into P3 for a while, but ultimately, the later the McLarens were on their tires, the more their pace was dropping off. It was just dropping off faster, clearly, than the Red Bulls, and faster than, at times, the Mercedes and Sergio Perez coming up. So he ultimately loses out to both Hamilton and Perez. But still, a solid, for a rookie, this is another solid result. P5 on the day for Oscar Piastri.
Yeah, he looked really good. Was disappointed for the second race in a row to see him, you know, just missing out on that podium. I'm sure it'll come soon enough, but he's got to be sitting there going, God, so close.
Yeah, and you know, I think part of it is just he hasn't been. I think this is one of those races where you said, okay, he didn't do any like obvious rookie mistakes type things, but this is one of those things where it became a more tire management race. He hasn't really been up there. He seemed to go through his tires a little bit more than Lando did, mm-hmm. Even given the same equipment. I think if you put him in this situation next year, I think you're going to see a different result. I don't think you're going to find him a minute off the pace. I don't think you're going to find him necessarily maybe even losing out to Lewis. I think Sergio was on a bit of a mission today to kind of shut everybody up. So I think that was, you know, he was going up against the Red Bull and close, but not there. And then when we get to Lando, I'll talk more about, you know, the McLaren relative pace and everything. But yeah, I do think you put him in this situation next year, I think it's better than P5, but this is still solid. So we will transition into that podium where we find P3 Sergio Checo Perez rallying back from P9 and qualifying. P2 was Lando Norris, a very hard-earned, stressful P2 for Lando Norris. And in P1, oh boy, just on a Sunday drive, corner one and was gone. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. They set the record for the most consecutive wins with 12. 33 seconds up the road. Yikes, 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 yikes. If we thought they were vulnerable on Saturday, boy, did Max shut everybody up on Sunday. Wow. Mm-hmm. Cody, thoughts on the podium?
I thought that the battles for the podium positions, other than first, were probably the most exciting part of the race at the end. You had Lando Norris trying to hold on for second for dear life as Sergio Perez seemed to be reeling him in, and Lewis Hamilton coming along with him. And then it seemed that the pace for Perez just kind of dropped off. Maybe he had used up too much of his tires trying to catch up to Lando. And then he started falling back into the clutches of Lewis Hamilton, who I'm sure is also desperate to try to get that podium after getting the pole and then dropping back. So you had this dynamic of like, who's going to catch who? Like I said before, I think given a few more laps, Hamilton probably could have caught Perez. But, you know, good on Checo for being on the podium, trying to, you know, shut up all the naysayers, you know, make back in Q3 finally this week, albeit not very far into Q3, but being back on the podium in that Red Bull at least shows that he's got enough to play the team game and be that, you know, useful rear gunner. And, you know, for Lando Norris, good on him, number two for second race in a row. It looks like McLaren is now the real deal, and I'm hoping that it stays that way for your sake, because it's really exciting. I'm back up in the mix. You know, I haven't seen McLaren really making any meaningful gun for it since, what, 2021, really? So they've had a couple years off now, and really excited to see him, hopefully somebody, taking it to Red Bull and making it a little bit more competitive for Max Verstappen, because, like you said, he was out on the Sunday drive. I loved it at the end of the race when he was like, oh, yeah, I loved that last stint. It was so nice. The car's so nice to drive. Doesn't sound like he was stressed at all about, you know, making it seven wins in a row. He's out there doing Max things and being incredibly dominant.
Yeah, so, I mean, first off, to Sergio Perez, who had, I think, the weight of the collective F1 world at him, especially given the things going on the sister team and now who's driving for them, needed to have a good Sunday, did have a good Sunday, manages to put it all together, did not have a good Friday at all, did not have a good Saturday, if you're actually thinking about it, because, you know, it's an RB19, and it should be better than P9, if you're being honest. Mm-hmm. But still, good recovery drive. He was clearly on it. He clearly understood what he needed to do and managed to get it done. You know, would he have gotten that second place? It seemed like it all hinged between it was lap traffic that actually, I think, played a much bigger role in this, even with the blue flags. But Norris comes up on Sargent and Hulkenberg, and he clears Sargent. He had a little while before he could get into the blue flag zone for Hulkenberg, and there was that, obviously, team radio where Lando's yelling, you know, get these guys out of the way. They're not racing for anything. And, of course, that gets played, and, you know, Reddit will do what Reddit always will do with such things. But once he got past Hulkenberg, Perez had a hell of a time getting through those same two cars, and that's where I think the pace started to drop off, because up until that point, it was almost 3 seconds that Perez had gotten within Norris's pace. But after that, it seemed to calm down, and, you know, luckily we didn't have any track limit strikes or black and white flags or any of that kind of stuff to worry about, so he's able to kind of bring it home. But, you know, to your point on can the McLarens take the fight to Red Bull, what I saw today was they were able to do it for about 66% of the tire stints. And it was that last third of the tire stints that is the difference. Why is it 33 seconds up the road? Well, it's those last third of the tire stints where the McLarens had to go into a lot more tire conservation mode. And Max's car just didn't. He was just able to put in the lap times whenever he wanted to. You know, he could box whenever he basically needed to. Mm-hmm. He could have come in to try. You know, he smashed the fastest lap three or four laps into his final stint and didn't even – and no one was coming close to that time.
Yeah,
nobody was coming close to that time. Like most people were lapping in the 122s, if you're lucky, and he punched in a 120 mid for the fast lap. So, yeah, he was gone. But I do also think, you know, that is, if there is still a bit of a bugaboo with the McLaren car, it was a hot race. It was a hot, sticky conditions. It's not what they thought they were going into. They didn't think it was going to work as well as it did here. But the fact that it is, all these other circuits, there's going to be a lot of circuits. It's not going to be as hot necessarily as anywhere else. And they look as racy as anybody right now. So maybe we got something cooking for the MCL boys this year. We'll have to see. I am now getting more and more excited for COTA every time I see it, because COTA reminds me so much of Silverstone. It's not funny. But anyway, I will think about that in my dreams when we get close to going
there
in October.
There's a lot of upgrades and stuff that could happen between now and then. So I'm trying to keep the expectations tempered a little bit, but I was excited enough to break out the golf hat today.
Nice. Looks good. Looks good.
Yeah, yours too.
Yeah, this is two podcasts in a row where we've had everybody in MCL gear. I'm influencing you guys. It's nice. It's good to see. All right. So I guess that's it for the Hungarian GP. We will take a quick break. We'll pay a bill or two. We'll come on back. We'll look at where the standings are. We'll get into some fan emails. We've had enough of our takes. We'll get into some of your takes on what you guys saw, and we'll do our awards. We don't have predictions this week, so we won't necessarily do that, but that's okay. Cody will take it to me next week. I'm sure he's ready to do that. So come on back, and we'll get into your thoughts on the Hungarian GP.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 Podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back to Season 5. This is episode number 22 of the Outlap F1 Podcast. Pretty sure it's 22. Yes, that's what my notes say. It is 22. It's our Hungarian GP race review. You've got Andy, and he's back from Japan, and I'm along with Cody tonight. And we've just given our thoughts on the Hungarian Grand Prix. So let's take a look at where the standings shake out after today's round. Cody, take a crack at the drivers.
All right. Our drivers' standings for 2023 as of the Hungarian Grand Prix are, to no one's surprise, Max Verstappen still holding on to first position and increasing his lead to a total of 281 points. So 110 points clear of second place, occupied by his teammate Sergio Perez, driving the second Red Bull. Third place, still, Fernando Alonso holding on to that position with 139 points for Aston Martin. Number four and number five, the two Mercedes drivers, Lewis Hamilton and George Russell, with 133 and 90 points, respectively, followed by the two Ferrari drivers in sixth and seventh, Carlos Sainz ahead of Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz with 87 points and Charles Leclerc with 80. Up to eighth place now, Lando Norris with McLaren at 60 points. Ninth place is Lance Stroll driving that other Aston Martin with 45 points. And in 10th place, Esteban Ocon holding on for now for Alpine Renault with 31 points.
All right, so looking at the team standings, again, in a league of their own, Red Bull Racing Powertrains, 452 points. It's a massive points haul for a little over half a season, but man, oh man. Mercedes check in with P2. They are on 223 points. In P3 is Aston Martin. The gap between Mercedes and Aston Martin is widened this round. They check in with 184 points. P4 is Ferrari. They are up to 167 points. P5 opening up the gap on P6 is McLaren Mercedes. They check in with 87 points. P6 is the Alpine team. They did not score today, so they remain on 47 points. P7 is Williams. They remain tied with Haas, but Williams has the tiebreaker as of right now. So Williams checks in P7 with 11, and Haas checks in with P8 with 11 as well. P9 is Alfa Romeo. Thought they could have scored. They could have overhauled two teams today had they managed to pull it off, but that did not happen. They remain in P9 on 9 points, and in P10, AlphaTauri Honda with those 2 points. All right. So you've heard our takes on the Hungarian GP. We'll now flip it over and get your takes on the Hungarian GP. It's the fan email segment. This is always one of my favorite parts of the show. Cody, Deanna's not here, so I guess it's your time to shine.
All right. Our first fan email coming through is from Rachel Fleming. Thank you, Rachel. And she says, so that was a thrill ride, not. Though it could have been worse, could have had Hamilton and Perez on the podium instead of Norris. But firstly, was Joe taking bowling lessons from his teammate? Because that was painful to watch, and from a former Alpine junior to boot. Yes, Rachel, I agree. It was painful watching Joe take out those two Alpine cars right out of the get-go. Honestly, I would have been happy seeing Lewis Hamilton on the podium, maybe instead of Perez, but definitely more exciting having somebody who's rarely there, but more frequently now with Lando Norris. What's your thought?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually McLaren's, I think, first back-to-back podium since, like, 2011 or something like that, or 2013. It's been a while. It's been a long time since they've had back-to-back podiums. And I'll check my stats on that and let everybody know in the Twitter comments when they come.
If that's how long it's been, it's painful.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while. Let's just put it this way. It's been a long time since they've been able to throw some good results consistently up. Yeah, not the most exciting of races. This was more of the 200-mile-an-hour strategy type race, which can be interesting in its own way, but you didn't have necessarily the full amount of wheel-to-wheel action until kind of the very, very end, and then you were almost wishing for another lap or two to see what could have come out of it. But, yeah, you know, with respect to Alfa Romeo, what could have been for them? Yeah, Grand Mugeot not getting the start, and then, yeah, turning into the bowling ball that takes both of the Alpines out. Yikes. Yeah, just not a good day for all of those teams combined, it seemed, especially after the first 500 feet.
Yep, I totally agree. Next one from the Formula, and Formula says, "All right, guys, here we go. I will say first and foremost that I do not like this circuit at all, but it delivered a fair bit of strategy battles throughout the field, which was great to see. I'm happy to see such a competitive McLaren too. Andy, do you think this pace will continue through the rest of the season?" I, for one, think that it will, but they're going to have a whole bunch of teams that are right there with them. So while they're going to be fighting up with the front much more, it might be traded with a lot of the other teams that are there, like Mercedes, Aston Martin, and the like.
Yeah, I can't seem to think that Aston Martin is just going to go away. I think they're too good to show, you know, I think these last couple of races have just, something's off there and I don't necessarily get it. I don't know if they're trialing new parts for next year or what's going on, but something is off with what's going on over there. But the other thing is that I'm also confident that they can sort it out. They probably know what's up with it and they can probably work to try to fix it. I do think the McLaren pace is legitimate. I do think that they're going to be racing Mercedes, Ferrari, Aston Martin consistently probably throughout the rest of the season. Now, the difference between them and those other guys is they have the much bigger hole to dig themselves out of than those other teams have in terms of the points and it actually being competitive. So, you know, it's two rounds in a row where they've scored close to 30 points. However, they're still 80-some points behind, they're literally 80 points exactly behind Ferrari. So as good as this run of form has been, they still have a bit of a mountain to climb. Now, if they can do it with another round next week, go into the break, come out of the break, we'll see what can happen. They're going to have to be consistent in order to really get back into that constructor fight. But I do think the pace is real. This was the type of track that they were very afraid of, and they were not shy about it and saying, look, we don't think this is going to suit our car. We'll see what happens. And they still come away with a P2 and a P5. So, yeah, obviously. And here's the other thing. They didn't bring the final upgrade, which is supposed to be the capper of all of the upgrades, to the car yet. They're holding that back until after the summer break. So, you know, there may be still more to come. Now, the other thing is, and Cody, you rightly say, what are these other teams going to do? I think Mercedes has already kind of said they're almost done with this car. They're going to go on to next year. What do Ferrari do? What do Aston Martin do? That's going to kind of determine where this goes in the now expanded battle for best of the rest.
I believe Aston Martin said something similar, that they are at this point focusing more of their efforts on next year's car. So I will really hope that they've got something else to bring to the car, because if they're not bringing much else, then they're probably going to spend a lot of time sitting where they sat today, you know, in those last couple of points paying spots, which, I mean, isn't awful considering their last couple years, but it would be a little disappointing to see Fernando Alonso scoring so many podiums at the beginning of the year only to be, you know, relegated to 8th, 9th, 10th. For the rest of the season, but hoping that also means that they're going to come out screaming next year. For our next fan email, Dave Doherty, back on the McLaren topic, your thoughts on McLaren and what can you say about their future? I mean, that was a masterpiece from McLaren. And we did kind of already talk about how McLaren is, excuse me, my cat, Kalana Cup. McLaren definitely taking a big step forward these last couple races. And I would agree that at least for Lando, this race was something of a masterpiece, being able to hold off the would be podium takers behind him. Oscar Piastri, good race, probably still has a little bit further to go before he's on the same caliber as his teammate, but definitely very promising. Seeing a lot of that skill that he showed in F2, F3 coming through. So really excited to see what's going to happen with him over the next couple of seasons. I'm hoping that, you know, even if McLaren can continue to carry this performance level throughout the rest of the season, I am really hoping that it carries over to next season as well, because we've seen, you know, over the past few seasons that, you know, they have one season where they're looking really good and they're starting to be competitive and getting podiums, and then the next season there's, you know, some regulation changes or the car's just not there, and suddenly they're not up there anymore. So I'm hoping that they make this last more than a season.
Yeah, and to your point, Cody, I think they're going to. I think they realized early enough in this year's car development that they had the problem. And I think that's what you're seeing with Mercedes, is they realized almost a little later that they had the problem. And now you're watching, we watched everybody kind of make this pivot into what we're all kind of seeing is now kind of the new convergence. And the question is, who's going to be the one to finally actually, if they can, take it to Red Bull? I wouldn't call today a McLaren masterpiece by any stretch. It was actually quite stressful. If there were P2 and P3, that would have been a masterpiece. That would have been fine with me. And I would, you know, if they double podiumed it, that's to me, that would have been the topper on the cake. But this was good. This was good in a place they didn't think they were going to be really good at. So, you know, to me, it tells me they're in now every round for podiums from now until the end of the year. Now, they're going to have rounds where they're not going to score this type of result. It's just the nature of Formula One. It's racing. You know, something's gonna break. There's gonna be a slow pit stop. You know, you gotta ease off. I have to ease myself off the hype train a little bit here. But to be in it every weekend is something that they're not used to, and a huge step forward. Now you start looking at decision making. Now to right now, they've not really let Lando and Oscar mix it up with each other. They've as soon as it's come even close to that, they've kind of said they put the stopper on it before it even starts. When does that start to erode? When does Oscar stop being patient with being the number two, and what happens then? So some fascinating things to watch for moving forward. It's fun when your team is good. I'm having a lot more fun these last three races than I have all the rest of the season, but still ways to go. Still a ways to go.
I think Oscar Piastri probably stays patient until it comes down to him competing with Lando for a podium spot. Like, if they're competing for third place, Oscar Piastri is going to want to get that podium, even if he has to take it from Lando. And I think that would, and Lando's, he's not going to give it up, because he's been fighting for that team for years and years and years, and just finally, you know, starting to get a car that can compete for podiums on the regular. So he's not going to want to give it up either. I bet that's the time when that's going to start to erode, and it could come sooner than later.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, you're seeing what in just even these last two rounds. This is why Oscar Piastri was as sought after as he was. This is why it was the tweet heard around the world, while we can still say tweet. You know, this is why all that stuff was as big of a deal as it was. And, you know, he could have been in an Alpine this year, and we wouldn't have ever gotten this type of combination. So it's fun. It's exciting. But there's still work to be done. There's still work to be done on this car. I'm hoping that they've already started, you know, with a much better fundamental base on next year's car, and that when we actually get to testing, it's not a painful experience anymore. I'd actually like to see them, you know, be out there when they're supposed to be out there and doing the same things as everybody else and getting through their program a lot better.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Our last fan email comes from, and I apologize if I butcher your last name, Roberto Moraes. He asks, why did the Mercedes and McLaren paces change so much during the race? They were complete opposites, it seems. Mercedes was nowhere at the beginning, and the Mercedes pit strategy seems off. They got overcut multiple times. I think that comes a lot down to just the changing dynamics throughout the race. You have cars getting lighter as they burn off fuel throughout a race. You have the track conditions changing, track getting hotter, becoming more rubbered in. You have, I'm sure drivers probably getting more comfortable with the track and where the race is standing as it goes, differing tire compounds, like you name it. There's things changing, you know, all over the place throughout the entire race. So I would say probably, you know, pretty normal to see the performance change. Although I do admit that, especially with Lewis Hamilton, he seemed to be, you know, not with the car at all at the beginning. They're going from first to what, fourth or fifth, something like that, within that first lap. And then it wasn't until the very end where he was clawing that back and looking like he was on for potentially getting that last podium spot. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the Mercedes, even back to Saturday, and they've gone out and were public about it. They said, look, our best possible pace was going to be on the soft tires on a qualifying run. That's where our car seemed to hook itself up. It's just kind of how the aero worked with those sets of tires. They were able to fire them up real early. With respect to the McLaren pace, you saw, at least in qualifying, them able to fire up and use every tire, and every tire seemed to last it throughout the whole set of the qualifying laps. The thing with the McLarens were, they're actually, one of their better sectors was sector three, which is the, when is the last time you could say that? You know, usually they would come out, they'd get a good first sector, and then it would just fall off from there. But that wasn't the case on Saturday. Come into Sunday, and like we talked about, I thought the McLaren car was elite for 66% of the tire stint, and then it chewed up the tires to the point where it just couldn't be that anymore. And then you have to shift into tire saving mode. Conversely, when you're watching the Mercedes, they were coming into their operating window at the last part of the tire stint as the fuel's burning off and the car's getting lighter and it's coming closer to what a qualifying sim would look like. So you saw that kind of dynamic, and it was interesting to watch. It looked like a rubber band. You know, it would expand out and then contract back in. That's from what I could see from the timings. That's what I saw in terms of pace between both Mercedes and McLaren over the course of the race today.
Very good. All right. Do you want to take it away for our weekly awards?
Yeah, we will get into now our weekly awards. And we will start out with the rubbish and my on-track rubbish. I tried to do this in French. I'm going to butcher this, but I'll try it anyway. C'est que c'est passé, Alpine? What the hell happened, Alpine? My gosh, 500 feet and your day is done. That's two races in a row where the guys you're fighting are literally driving away from you and way up the road. So if you want to get back into, if that is a fight, I don't know if that's still going to be where the fight is, but Alpine got to get it together and got to get it together fast. One of the off-track stories was they've shuffled their structure around a little bit. Again, Laurent Rossi is out as the CEO. He's moved to some sort of internal position. He's still with the team, but he's not necessarily doing anything in Formula One, and they've gone with another structure. It looks like Otmar is going to be president and chief of the entire F1 operation for the time being. So we'll see kind of how that dynamic works and if, you know, anything comes out of that. But that looks to be a head rolling or at least moved around at Alpine. And my off-track rubbish goes out to Danica Patrick, who made some, what I would say, some unfortunate comments regarding other female drivers. On the F1 Juniors broadcast, which if you were watching on ESPN, you didn't necessarily have access to. It was a Sky thing. They were bringing the kids, the media kids out, and they were doing some other things. And Danica basically said that it was, I don't want to go quote for quote or bring it all up, but it was more or less she didn't think that there was going to be any female talent coming through anytime soon because she didn't think women in general had the aggression that was needed. And I just think that that's unfortunate. I think you put a woman behind a car, I think they're just as good. I just don't think we've seen opportunity given to them. I would rather see bigger and better opportunities given to female drivers. What all the F1 Academy is about. It's horribly unfortunate that the fate of the W Series ended up where it was. Mm-hmm. But we got to get, you know, if this F1 Academy is real, and we'll see it probably at more F1 type tracks next year, the spotlight will be on up and coming female drivers. That hopefully is a good thing, and rising tides lift all boats. So that's where I'm hoping it goes to. So yeah, unfortunate comments.
Yeah. My rubbish award for the week is going to go to Zhou Guanyu for his taking a fantastic qualifying performance, the best of his career, and pretty much throwing it away on lap one with his slow start off the line, and then bowling with Alpines and Daniel Ricciardo. We've said it several times before, but definitely a story of what could have been. He makes it through that first lap, and he might be scoring some really good points. Alfa Romeo might be overtaking a couple teams, just within a couple points of them. It could have been really good for him, and it didn't materialize. So he's getting the rubbish award from me.
All right, very good. All right, so we'll move into analysis paralysis, a.k.a. what did Ferrari do to muck it up this week? And not surprising, I'm going with Ferrari. The entire decision-making over there just continues to baffle me. Carlos Sainz is apparently making switch calls now, which is not something a driver is supposed to be able to be doing, but I guess that happened today. Charles Leclerc and his pit wall, Carlos Sainz and his pit wall, both screaming at everybody to get other teammates to move out of the way, and nobody did. Even though they said they were going to, nothing ended up coming out of any of that. It just feels so disorganized right now. I don't know what Fred Vasseur is going to do to try to pull it all together, at least for the rest of the season. I think in some stints the car is still good, but got to execute better than this. And then, you know, Leclerc gets the 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane. That's all on the driver. He's trying to try to push the limit on the in-lap and make that early part of the pit lane before the speed limit kicks in. And I guess he just didn't do it. So whether he didn't hit the button fast enough, I don't know. But that's more on the driver than the pit wall. But, yeah, just more of a comedy of errors today from the Scuderia.
It might not surprise you then that my analysis award also goes to Ferrari. One of my favorite bits that came out of this was back and forth between Leclerc and his race engineer. His race engineer is saying, oh, the race is going to come to you at the end of the race. And he's like, what do you mean the end of the race? Like, we're racing now. Like, what's our strategy for right now? We're checking. Like, they said that several times throughout the race, like, and I've noticed that in some of the past races, we're checking, or we're looking into it. It's like, you gotta be able to give your driver some info. Like, you know, you hear a lot of the other back and forth radios, and it seems much more like, what's the strategy? Okay, this is what we're gonna do, or this is what we need you to do, or, you know, if the driver's got questions, the engineer's telling them, well, this is why we're gonna do this. Whereas Ferrari seems to not have that answer on hand for their drivers. They're just, we're checking. We'll get back to you. doesn't really, you know, give a vote of confidence.
And that's what leads to the drivers questioning everything. And then everything turns into this like board meeting where they're all sitting around looking at each other like, what should we do? Should we pit now? We should have probably pitted three laps ago. Oops. You know, type of decision making. And to me, it's got to get better. You know, that to me, that should be Fred Vasseur's mission. Solve the decision desk. Because if you can do that, I think you've got a lot of good things about what's going on in that team already. And I don't know how much more patient Carlos Sainz is going to continue to be, because there was a point today where it felt like they were actively trying to make sure Leclerc was ahead, and then they almost, like, Kravitz tried to say, like, they're telling Sainz to stay out of the 5 seconds. I don't think they were actually doing that. But it just it seemed very disorganized today. So anyway, Ferrari, the clean sweep of the analysis paralysis award yet again. All right. So we'll move into the dark horse. And Cody, what's your thought on the dark horse today?
My dark horse for this race is George Russell, albeit he's driving a Mercedes, decent car. I definitely did not see him jumping all the way from where he started in 18th place all the way up to, what was it, 6th place? Yeah. Big gains for George Russell. I was going into Sunday thinking, I don't know if, you know, George can really keep up with Lewis Hamilton this year. And he's kind of proved me wrong with that big comeback performance. So good on you, George. And hope you can get some better qualifying for the next race.
Yeah, I don't think he'll leave it to the very, very end of the Q1 session next time. I think that's lesson learned. Mine's going to go out to a guy who's kind of taken it up the, you know what, the last couple weeks, it seems. Sergio Perez, at least the Sunday drive, gets to take some of the pressure off for at least the next 4 days. Now, if he spins out and doesn't score in Spa heading into the break, he's going to have an entire summer break of nothing other than, so when is Daniel Ricciardo moving over to Red Bull? And when is Daniel Ricciardo moving into that seat or wherever? Or is Lando Norris going over to Red Bull this year, even though contractually that's not possible? But, you know, rumors are what they are. whatever. So he gets at least a reprieve today. P9 to P3. Good drive, Sergio Perez. Okay, so we will move into now the driver of the day, and I'll go first with this one. Got to give it to Max and Red Bull. They were record-breaking for a reason. You don't always have to like them, but boy, you got to respect the result, man. Woo! 33 seconds up the road. That's damn impressive.
Yeah. Yep, Max is nuts and automatic and all kinds of other big buzzwords.
Cheat code. Looks like a cheat code.
Yeah, cheat code. That's a good one. I'm hoping that he breaks the consecutive win record. I think if there is anyone who is going to do it, it would be Max. And 10 wins in a row would really be something incredible. For my driver of the day, though, I'm actually going to go with Lando Norris, because while Max makes it look easy, he only really had a hard part, I would say, in the first couple turns where he's trying to make sure Lewis Hamilton and everyone else stays behind him. And then, you know, just tire management and driving away from the field for the rest of the race. Lando really had to work for it. I feel like he had to make sure that he kept everyone behind him. He had to try to manage those tires better and stay out of DRS ranges and hope no one was going to catch him. So being that he's on the podium consecutively, two races in a row, I'm going to tip my hat to Lando Norris.
So he gets driver of the day, despite the fact that he broke the trophy, huh?
Oh my God, I felt so bad for that, because I guess that's actually not the first time he's done that too, but this trophy was apparently very delicate. Made of porcelain.
Yes. I guess it takes 8 months to craft, and yeah, I've seen a figure of, what was it, 40,000 euros or something?
Yeah, it was 40,000 euros, 6 months to make, and he destroys it, like, right after it's handed to Max, and you can kind of even see him as he's, like, as it breaks on the ground, like, he kind of looks down at it, and then is like, well, I'm just going to spray the champagne anyway.
You know, at the British Grand Prix, they were trying to give Max the sponsored trophy, you know, on the podium. And then they were trying to give, you know, the gold cup or the gold, you know, the big British Grand Prix thing. And I think it was Mohammed Ben Sulayem is yelling, Max, you gotta come over here for the picture. And meanwhile, Max is getting sprayed with the champagne on the podium because, you know, everyone else is being, you know, so boisterous about it. And but that's just Lando being Lando. Yeah. You know, he does the pop cork thing. That's kind of his signature. He hasn't gotten to do it a whole lot in the last couple of years, so I guess it got the better of him. So the better answer is put the trophies away before you give the kids the champagne. That's what you do. Put them in the cupboard and then let them spray each other.
I gotta wonder, because like I said, this isn't his first offense doing this. He's tipped over several trophies with his cork popping thing. And I agree, it's his signature thing. It's pretty cool to see. I got to wonder, though, after breaking a 40,000 euro trophy, if, you know, if there's anything that's going to come with from it. I doubt he'd get a fine or anything, but I wonder if he would get like a, you know, a stern talking to maybe make sure he's doing it where he's not going to break thousands of dollars worth of, you know, trophies. So,
well, we'll know if we see anything in the next race director's notes when they do like alternate podium procedure, mm-hmm. AKA the Lando Norris rule or something like that.
Yeah. So if number four is on the podium, please remove trophies before.
Yes, exactly. Don't give him the bottle until you put all of the valuable stuff away, including all the pictures and whatnot that you want to take before everybody gets very wet. But anyway, all right. So I guess that will get us through the rundown. As I said before, we don't have predictions, but we will get back to that next week. When Cody and I are on the previews, we will get back to our predictions game. I need to rally. I need to pull a McLaren. I need to get some upgrades and I need to rally, but I will do my best to come back this week for Spa, which is where we're going. So I guess we got one more race. Then we get the summer break. Spa, Francorchamps, which is usually the traditional after the summer break start, moves up the calendar a bit, becomes the last race before the break. I've always loved that track. I think it may be a little bit somber because, you know, we had a death there not very long ago in one of the junior categories. So interesting to see how the drivers will take El Rouge and that whole complex. But hopefully we get through it with no problems, no issues. And I actually am hoping for no rain at Spa because I'm still a little traumatized by whatever that mess was from 2021.
Yeah. Spa is one of my favorite races. The cars look so nice going around that circuit, and the camera shots going through, you know, Eau Rouge and Radeon, they always look so cool. So I'm hoping for a rainless race as well, just because, you know, it takes all the wind out of the sails when you're only going around for two laps and you call that a race. But it's also a little weird having it before the summer break because I always feel like, you know, everyone likes Spa. So it's always a really good one to have the first race after the summer break because everyone's really jazzed and looking forward to it because it's Spa. Now we're going to have Zandvoort, which, okay. I mean, everyone like it for Max's sake because he'll probably win his home Grand Prix again. But it just doesn't have the same oomph as Spa, we'll say. So, but yeah, really looking forward to it.
All right. So yeah, as we mentioned, we'll be back Wednesday for our preview. And hopefully we'll get James wanted to be on tonight, but he's attending to a sick kid. And anybody knows who's had their first child and when the kid gets sick, it's not a fun experience. So, James, I hope both you and Jameson get well soon. And hopefully we'll see you next weekend. If not, it'll just be Cody and I yet again. So for everybody connected to the show, it's always fun to do. And as always, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support and we'll see you on the next one.